This podcast has been brought to you by Panacea Healthcare Services, a trusted solution for your billing and collection needs.
Welcome to BH Billing Advocates. This is a podcast where we talk about everything that supports behavioral healthcare billing efforts. We'll be talking about billing and collections, utilization review, credentialing, clinical documentation, and everything that supports the revenue growth for substance abuse and mental health treatment providers nationwide.
All right, I think some introductions are in order. I'm Gian DaCosta. I'm the Director of Operations here at Panacea Healthcare Services.
And I'm James Gordon, Managing Partner for Panacea Healthcare Services.
All right, thank you guys for joining us again here today at the Billing Advocates Podcast. So I wanted to do a quick address of the podcast. We're going to be actually having some changes. We're trying to kind of bring you more longer and in-depth content. And so in that fact, what we're going to be doing is having the current event segment, and that won't really change much. That will still be James and myself during that current event segment. And then in the meat and potatoes segment, we brought on a couple of other experts in the industry from our company, Panacea Healthcare Services. And that is our billing manager, Jason Chaco, and our collections manager, Jackie Serino, just to kind of widen that field of information that can be given to you, give more feel for things to be bounced off of for more in-depth information and examples. So we're actually really excited about this. We're very, very passionate about this podcast and providing that thought leadership. And so we should be able to push forward in that way. However, for this week, even though James will normally be on for our current event segments, he's actually out sick. So we still need to record because we want to get that content out for you guys. And so Jackie and Jason are going to be joining me for this current event segment.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
So this is Jackie, and that was Jason, and so they're going to do a bit more of an in-depth introduction as far as themselves and their background during the meat and potatoes segment. So for right now, we're just going to go over this current event. All right, so today's article comes from Healthcare Finance News, and so it's in that trend of the topic that we were talking about in a previous one, where basically the Trump administration is trying to make healthcare more transparent. So the article is on healthcarefinancenews.com. It's CMS proposed rule requires hospitals to make public their payer-specific negotiated rates. And so when they say that, just for clarification as far as what that is the hospitals, most hospital systems, they have an in-network contract with different insurance carriers. And what's interesting is your in-network contracts don't reflect the same across all commercial payers. So the majors, Blue Cross, Aetna, Cigna, United, you could have a different contract with each, where say for the ER service, if you came in for the emergency room visit, you may have a specific rate at Blue Cross, you may have a percentage of bill charge at Cigna, and at United, you may have a percent of Medicare. It's very interesting. Each one has their own prerogative of how they set their rates. And so basically, he's calling for transparency with this. And so what are you guys' opinions on that?
I think it's really something interesting. It's something new. You know, when you go to the hospital and you see your hospital bill, you don't really know what the negotiated rates are for the different insurances. So I think it's really interesting that we, as the patients, get to actually see how these rates are negotiated and what they actually are when we go into the hospitals. So I think it's very interesting.
And sometimes when we receive those explanation of benefits, the EOBs, even as a patient, I'm like, this is outrageous sometimes, really, like the cost. So to be seeing how they may generate those amounts is quite interesting, but at the same token, it could cause some issue.
Exactly what I was thinking. Like the whole dynamic, like if you read the articles, them saying that they're intending for it to lower patient cost of care, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like when you see gas prices and other things like that, when everyone knows what the other is doing, it makes it very strange as far as, like, you know, I guess, are they going to basically collectively try to keep a bar? So that way, you know, it's not that everybody has different things, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you go to the store, you're at different Walmarts or Publixes, they try to relatively try to keep their prices around the same, where technically speaking, the cost of the good could have been much lower, but now we've all marked it up to this price. Like, if we're all at this bar, then everyone has to pay that bar. And then also, insurance companies, I feel like you're creating an opportunity for them to price premiums differently, because then say the hospital's now asking for more money because they know that this hospital got more money, and so now they're saying they have to pay out more. you know, patients can then really make educated choices when they're picking the insurance they're going to. They could say, well, I know in my area, United Healthcare gives my doctors and my hospitals, like, the best rates as far as pricing is concerned. So I may pay a little more for my premium with United, but I'm going to get a better payout as far as my care and cost of care.
Yeah, I might get a bit more.
You know? So it's just really, really interesting. I feel like it can create a positive in that way, but then I could also see it flipping negatively, like, with that competition of, okay, well, who's doing what? And it, you don't really know how that's going to affect the patient and the patient's care. And then also from the provider side, how does that affect what I get paid, you know?
And where are you going to market? Like, exactly. Are you going to market to those policies that reimbursed a bit better?
Better, you know? Or, like, now I know, like, United Healthcare, as much as, you know, I'm going to assume, and we don't really know how much they all communicate with each other and the larger insurance carriers, but in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, now you guys can all communicate and lower the bar if you want to as far as what you negotiate as your in-network rate for a certain insurance carrier, you know, I mean, for a certain service. So, like, say our industry, substance abuse, because, of course, these things trickle down.
All the time.
They could all say, okay, well, Blue Cross, Cigna, Aetna, United, okay, well, we have to publish these rates now. I mean, the hospitals are publishing these rates now, so everybody's seeing what we're paying out for these things. Well, maybe we can all collectively start to lower that bar, which is kind of what we've seen happen, but I feel like it'll
and how low can you go?
Exactly. I think it'll be, you know? So it's kind of like a catch-22. I'm really excited to see how it's going to progress because I can see it going positive and negative. It just really depends on people's mindset as they go forward with it. But
I agree.
Transparency is still definitely, I think, the key to a better healthcare system.
Absolutely.
I agree. Definitely.
All right, guys, go ahead and get your dipping sauce ready because we're about to drop a fresh nugget on single case agreements. Hey, guys, Gian here. And so I just want to take a moment before we get into our meat and potatoes segment to introduce two new co-hosts that we'll be having during the meat and potatoes segment. We have our collections manager here at Panacea Healthcare Services, Jackie Sereno.
Hey.
And we have our billing manager here at Panacea Healthcare Services, Jason Chaco.
Hello.
And so I'm just going to give them a moment to really introduce themselves, give some background on themselves so that way you guys can be familiar before we move right on.
Hi, as Gian has stated, my name is Jackie Sereno and I'm the collections manager here at Panacea. And I have been in the medical field for about 25 years. It started, about 25 years ago, where I never thought I would be in the medical field whatsoever. Because my mother used to be in the medical field and do billing and collections for a chiropractic office. So I didn't want to do that. What I wanted to do was something completely different. However, as fate should have it, I went to work for a chiropractic office and a billing company who actually billed for a chiropractic office. And come, long story short, the person who hired me at her billing company used to work with my mother about 20 years ago, and that all came into play. Also, I was back then, when we used to do billing, we used to handwrite claims, so we did that for about a year.
I find that insane. Okay. I came in during the electronic age.
And trust me, my hand used to hurt because there's quite a few, there was like 30 to 40 patients a day, and we had to get those claims out in a timely manner. Then, lo and behold, Doc's Matrix came out. That was a printer that actually was a two-sided claim that used to continuously print claims. That was such a blessing because let me tell you, I loved that machine. Then, after my time there was up about 10 years, I went to work for a rehab center for a few years. There, I did billing and collections. I did it from A to Z. Appeals, everything. After my short time there, I came to Panacea Healthcare Services, and I've been here ever since. I love it. It's great. I work with a great bunch of people, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Hello, my name is Jason Chaco, as Gian said, and I'm the billing supervisor here at Panacea. I've been in the healthcare industry for about 10 years. Originally, I started out in banking, and I kind of transitioned over to get on the business side of the healthcare industry. And originally I started out in a pediatric practice, in office management, front office management, and billing as well. And we basically ran a pediatric office, did the front and back end, and eventually I transitioned over to substance abuse and mental health. And that's when I joined Panacea. And I really wanted to help out the facilities by, you know, getting them paid for their services at a proper amount so that they can continue to offer their services and get the patients better, to cure them of their diseases in addiction and mental health. And I've been doing that ever since. And, you know, every day we come to work and we have one thing in mind, and that's the patients. You know, every claim that we process cleanly, our patients are benefiting from, and we're going to help them get rid of their addiction and cure their mental illness.
All right, thank you guys for introducing yourselves. And so we're really hoping with this addition to the meat and potatoes segment that we can continue to just provide even more in-depth information, express our passion on these subjects, and really educate providers. So thank you guys for tuning in. All right, welcome to the meat and potatoes segment of our show today. And as I said earlier, we're going to be covering single case agreements. So we're going to basically give you the definition, give you some breakdown, maybe some examples of what a single case agreement will entail, mm-hmm. and the intricacies of that. So essentially, a single case agreement is an agreement between the facility and an insurance company to allow a patient who may not have out-of-network benefits when the facility itself is out-of-network to go to that facility particularly. And so where that starts is with the verification of benefit, of course, because that's where you found out that the out-of-network benefits of the patient does not match, the lack of out-of-network benefits of the patient does not match with the facility status of out-of-network. So during that verification, you can ask the question, are single case agreements accepted, where they will make an exception for this patient to come to that facility. So if that goes from there and it is a yes, what would happen is, one, the patient can reach out to the insurance as well and say, hey, I want to go to this facility, and then detail the reasons why. Was it because somebody that they know got sober at that facility, like my father or my brother, if they, you know, something like that, or if there's a doctor there that they've worked with in the past, if there's anything to do with mental health or psychiatric and they've seen progress with them, whatever that reasoning may be for the patient to really push for them to go to that facility. And then to actually initiate it from the facility side would be whoever they're utilizing for utilization review. They would take those initial intakes and things like that for their pre-assessments for those patients to call in and request that single case agreement. And then from there, if it is accepted, they'll go ahead and request a negotiation for rates, because essentially what it is with a single case, they are making an exception and they're going to process it as if you were in network, but they have to get a rate and contract in place with you to basically
and
make
that is a difficult task agreement. In Florida, because they do not like it, because the facilities are a dime a dozen down here.
That is very true, Jackie. The facilities are a dime a dozen. So one thing you have to really bear in mind is your location. So when you're in California, when you're in Florida and Arizona, and you're in those really high volume places, you really can't expect to get single case agreements constantly. That's where sometimes that patient reaching out first can make a difference, because if they have very real good reasons why they want to go to this facility, the insurance is going to be more sympathetic to a patient call rather than the facility call. Of it this way. They don't really care about you. They don't have a contract with you, and they know they have contracts with people with other people in this area, so that, you know, they're options. So that's definitely something to think about.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to have Jackie actually go over with you what happens with the negotiation side, because she works very, very closely with that as it ends up turning out to be money.
Well, when it comes to negotiating, obviously we have, not only do we have the patient's best interest, but we also have our client's best interest at heart. And what we want to do is always maximize their reimbursement. So we research exactly the geographical area. As I stated before, Florida is very difficult. So a lot of times the patient reaching out is the best option as to why they want to go to that facility. Anyway, when we do try to negotiate, we do it based on what the reimbursements are in that area. And we try to get it as high as we possibly can. Usually, I go for 85 to 90% of our bill charge. Sometimes we succeed. Sometimes we don't, but I will always go for that higher dollar amount.
Are there any things that you, like, consider? Do you look at any of the clinicals to, like, determine if the patient has been, say, like, their treatment history. Like, have they been seen more than once? Have they failed somewhere else? Is that anything that you take into consideration while you're negotiating, or does that not run the play?
No, absolutely. Good point, Gian. Yes, that does come into consideration, because when you review the clinicals, if somebody's been in there or they have, you know, relapsed over and over from other places, and all of a sudden maybe in this geographical area that the patient will be successful, maybe their program, but yes, that has to come into play too.
Or if they failed somewhere, that's going to work. I think that could definitely make a role.
Absolutely.
That maybe they need to try something that is unconventional or different, or something different. You know, those are definitely factors. There's a lot of factors you want to make sure you're reporting on, especially when you're going for a single case agreement in clinicals, because it could make a difference when we're doing that request.
For sure.
And then, Jason, from that billing perspective, like, what do you feel like is different from billing a regular out-of-network claim to billing a single case agreement claim?
Well, Gian, by the time that SCA gets approved and it's ready to go, when we're ready to bill the claims, the first thing we need to make sure is we have all the documentation that's associated with that SCA. And the key things that we're looking for is, number one, the service. Is the service on that contract that's approved? The next thing is the charge. We need to make sure after the charge is negotiated that we know that charge, so we can put that on the claim and make sure we're billing it at the appropriate amount. We also always look for inclusivity. You know, is that service going to be inclusive in that SCA? Can we bill other services aside from, you know, the main level of care that we're trying to get for the patient? And, you know, some SCAs will have them, and some SCAs will just be that main service is all you can bill and everything is inclusive.
And just to clarify, in case anybody's very confused what inclusive is, essentially what inclusive is you have the main portion of the service that's being rendered, which will be considered the treatment. So that would be your PHP, your IOP, your detox, your res, the actual levels of care. And then anything else outside of that could be deemed inclusive. So say you do a UA, they're saying, well, that is included in the treatment that you already rendered. Say you do an individual or a group, or even some insurances can be crazy and say a medical service, they'll say it's included in that treatment, especially while you're in the upper levels of care, inpatient and detox.
And I argue that point, because you know why? That's when a doctor, you go to a doctor's office, you see the doctor, you leave and you go to treatment after you saw that doctor. How are you going to tell me that's inclusive to any other service performed that day? That's separate.
Exactly. And so back to you, Jason. I'm sorry, I just jumped in just going to make that clarification for that inclusivity.
No problem. We just got to make sure that everything in the documents match what we're billing. You know, we bill the appropriate rate, the appropriate service, and we always keep the copies of those documents. So when we follow up on the back end, we make sure that the insurance companies kind of hold up their end of the bargain and process the claim, you know, how we build it in the agreement.
And, you know, I actually really love that you said that, Jason, because I know we've seen in the past where we do single case agreements with some facilities that insurance companies, depending on the insurance when they're doing the SCA, they may describe a service differently than we would normally. Like, I want to say that we saw recently where there was a facility they were going for either res or PHP, and they, like, classified it as rehabilitation and asked us to use a completely different code, but that's just what they wanted to use to describe it for that service. So then we have to go according to what that particular insurance company is asking for.
That's true.
Or else they just won't communicate with us as far as what we bill to what we submit. If we submit the correct way, the way we know the code's descriptions match, unfortunately, because our SCA is covering a different service because that's how they describe it in their system, it's going to deny. It wouldn't pay out. So you have to go based off your SCA that you got and ensure that you've correctly communicated in the clinical what you intend to with the patient. And then they're communicating to us what that classifies as in their system.
Absolutely.
Yep, you're right.
So do we have any crazy examples of SCAs that we might have? Any that are going on right now that we would want to...
I'm in the middle of negotiating one because they're asking for a ridiculously low amount for PHP. However, what we might consider ridiculous, a lot of times, especially on the West Coast, we deal with a lot of the self-funded, and we deal with a lot of union plans.
And when you say self-funded, you mean patient self-funded plans?
That's correct. That means the group, the employer group, funds the medical for their employees. Mm-hmm. So they have an amount of money in a in an account or wherever they do it, and they say, okay, the patient goes to, their employee goes for treatment, but they only have a certain amount of money allotted for these claims. So sometimes we'll say, okay, yeah, we bill this amount, which might be, I'm just throwing a number out there, $2,000. You want to offer me $250. Now, please, that's not even... Are you really insulting my intelligence on that matter? Because that doesn't even cover costs at this rate. So, obviously, I come back and say, okay, give me... I always go for, again, 85, 90%. They'll kick it back. But then that's where the negotiating phase comes. But a lot of these self-funders really don't go above a certain amount, unfortunately.
Because they're not trying to blow the bank.
That's right. It's what they have, and that's it. So I'm very cautious as to what I'm going to send back, because sometimes if you don't do it correctly, they come up with an amount and that's it. And I might end up with that.
And it's unfortunate to say, like, I can understand it, because especially when we talk about substance abuse, you never know about relapsing, stuff like that. They have to really plan for this. If they're going to continue to employ this person after you get out of treatment, what happens if they need to go back in treatment 6 months later or even a year later? One treatment provider, one treatment stay could break somebody's bank, depending on how large or small that facility is. So that cost containment is actually really important. So that's a great example or something to think about with your single case agreements. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening in on our meat and potatoes segment. We are actually going to be transitioning into a new segment today, which is going to be our mailbag segment. So stay tuned for that. All right, so thank you guys for tuning in. This is the new segment that we'll be having with our podcast. So thank you to everyone who sends in mail, emails, questions, anything like that. This will be our mailbag segment when we're answering any and all questions that are sent into our inboxes. Here in this segment, I also have Jackie and Jason here with me. And so the first question that we have for our mailbag segment is, when reviewing a VOB, what are the key indicators and factors that me as a behavioral health care provider should be considering looking at? So first thing I want to say whenever I hear the word verification of benefit is the reminder that a verification is not a guarantee of payment, and the information received on a verification is not guaranteed to be accurate. And so when I say this, sometimes you have to remember that it's another human being on the side, on the other side answering these calls, or it's a computer system giving you information based on what's available at that very moment. And so sometimes in their system, they may, something simple as, is JCO or CARF required? Sometimes they, for some reason on the other side, the rep will tell you, no, it's not required. And then you go through the whole process and you find out it was required. And it's just the fact that that rep gave you misinformation. Sometimes when it comes to deductibles or copays, whatever it may be, the system may show one number right now, but then other claims are pending. And then when you finally file your claims, you get a whole different story. Verifications are 100% just based on information available at that time or what that rep is providing to you. And so from there, I'm going to let Jackie and Jason kind of go first, maybe Jason, and say what they look for when they're looking at VOBs. And then I'll chime in at the end if I feel like there's still other things I'm thinking of.
Well, when we're looking at the VOB on the billing side, the number one thing that I look for is, first of all, is the policy active? You don't want to bill an inactive policy because it's going to deny for sure. Then I also look at the actual service that the patient has. Is that a covered service? If the patient has benefits for a lower level, but you've got them at a higher level, they're not going to pay the claim. That's almost a guarantee. So I always look for the service, if it's covered, if any ancillary services are covered as well, like one of the additional things that we can bill. I always look for, is there a secondary policy? You know, you might have, this might be a primary or a secondary policy. The patient might have multiple policies, so we need to make sure that we are billing appropriately to, you know, whichever is the primary, and then send it over to the secondary. We want to make sure that the coordination of benefits is updated, that the patient mm-hmm. has to go ahead and do that. If not, you know, we need to reach out to the facility and have the patient update that immediately.
And for quick clarification for anyone who doesn't know, the coordination of benefit that he's referring to, that's essentially when you have more than one insurance policy, It's the identification of the order in which they'll cover services. So is Blue Cross your primary, then your United Healthcare your secondary? And of course, patients can call and try to make changes to that. And then depending on the circumstances of their personal life or the insurance's stipulations, they may be able to alter who's primary and who's secondary, but that's all up to the patient. A provider never wants to get involved in that. At most, you can advise them that you got X information as to this is primary, this is secondary, and then that's up to the patient to make those decisions after.
Also, you know, we always look for the notes, the additional notes that are on the verification, the additional notes for the policy itself. You know, one example that I can give you is I a lot of times see court-ordered treatments are not covered under this policy. So if a patient is actually court-ordered to go to a treatment center, the insurance company is not going to cover it. And that's not, you know, really a standard question. It's just more of additional details on the policy. So I always tell my billers, you know, read the VOB from, you know, top to bottom and always pay attention to the notes, because the notes could have the information whether the claim is going to get paid or not.
Jackie?
Well, we're the back end of things. So like in the game of telephone, sometimes the front end gets one bit of information. By the time it gets back to the collection's end, it's something completely different. But normally not. We don't have that much of a headache. Again, COB is very, very important. There's been a lot of times where the VOB actually states that COB needs to be updated, but no claims are processing. Why? Well, the letter was sent out because it needs to be updated. It still hasn't been updated. That is so crucial, because the insurance carrier will not pay a claim if there's a pending COB. Another thing, deductibles. The high deductibles. I get this a lot.
Higher every year.
What? Let me tell you something. Each time the VOB comes over and I see a $10,000 deductible with a $15,000 out-of-pocket, remember, that has to be met before your claims are going to process and pay. So if you have a high deductible, you can't expect that you're going to get an influx of
reimbursement. If a patient's starting at detox, you might lose all the detox going straight to deductible and then finally getting paid out at res.
Valid.
You know, definitely things to consider.
And these are all issues that come up when it comes to the collections department. So in addition to everything that Jason was stating, these are issues that we hit a lot when in the collections department. When my collectors are calling, we have a VOB up when we're on the phone with the representatives, because we need to have that bit of information. Exclusions on the policy. Sometimes exactly. We don't find out what the exclusions may be. Sometimes individual and group therapy may be an exclusion. It's not covered. It's not a covered benefit at all. But we don't find that out, until the claim has been submitted and we're calling to follow up. Hey, where's my money? So these are just things that we run into sometimes with the verification of benefits. But for the most part, the information given is usually valid and we're able to proceed and collect as normal.
And then another thing I would say to think about is also any requirements for that policy. Like, is JACA required, CARF required, which is kind of your accreditation for the facility. You also want to look at any policy requirements, exclusions, carve-outs, anything like that you want to look through. So as Jason said, honestly, reading your verifications from top to bottom is very important, especially in the behavioral industry. It's a little different with medical. A lot of people are a lot more relaxed when it comes to medical, I would say, verifications, where you can just kind of find out if they're active, in or out of network. And then for the most part, it's say your physician's office. Most people are going to have their regular primary.
You know,
it's a lot simpler. Right. But unfortunately for us in the behavioral industry, especially as the years have progressed, there's just so many different factors and you're just trying to get as much information up front as possible. So I say really look at everything, but the key indicators are definitely what they've said here. Those deductibles, inclusions, exclusions, carve-outs, and then COB, if the policy is even covering the service that you're going for. Those are definitely the main things to look for.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of BH Billing Advocates. Really appreciate your time.
If you have any questions on the information that was covered today, please do not be shy. There is no dumb questions at all. You can reach us at info@bhbillingadvocates.com. Plus, please note, if you have any other additional questions on topics that actually went beyond what we spoke about today, those particular questions could end up evolving to becoming a subject matter on one of our future episodes. So please, let us know what you're thinking as it pertains to the business side of behavioral healthcare. We're looking forward to helping.
And remember, no matter what the problem, we are always ready to snap a cape on.
Dun, 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 dun. BH Billing Advocates.